Relationships rule. That's my motto. I'm Janice Porter, and I love to share the power of relationship marketing to help grow and impact business. I've grown my business by building and nurturing relationships, and I'd like to help you do the same. Welcome to the Relationships Rule podcast, where connection means everything. Hi, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Relationships Rule. Losing my voice, it seems. Today's conversation is all about trust, reputation, and what truly makes someone referable. I'm joined by Stacey Brown Randall, who returns to the show after 5 years. I can't believe it. It's so exciting. With a fresh perspective from her new book, The Referable Client Experience. Stacey challenges the idea that referrals come from asking and instead invites us to look at how clients feel, how safe they feel, and whether they feel proud to put their name behind a recommendation. So, welcome to the show, Stacey.
Thank you so much for having me back, Janice. I'm excited to be here.
My pleasure. So I want to start by just asking, because when we met the first time, you had just written your first book.
Yeah.
And I'm excited. Your new book is pretty new. I think in the fall it came out. Yes, October, November.
In the fall, yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we're at the beginning of 2026 now. So I am curious, though, is your new book an extension of the first book, or is it like a big revelation of something new that you have discovered in your experience within the last 5 years?
Yeah, so I love that question because I think it's important to put the books in context. And like I had somebody the other day goes, well, I was going to buy your first book, but then I just decided to buy your second book because I'm assuming it's like all the new stuff. And I'm like, not exactly. Like that's not exactly how the books work. So the context that I think helps people understand, and some people just ask like, which book should I start with? And that's an excellent question because they actually address different strategies and different needs within your business. So when I work with a client on referral generation and increasing their referrals, right, I actually teach 20 different strategies. That's not to say there are 20 huge strategies with complex processes and procedures and all kinds of like to-do lists and checklists and things, right? Some of those strategies are situational and they're language-based, or they're because this happened, we need to know how to respond, and this is the process we follow when this happens. But I do teach referrals like they live as an ecosystem within your business, and you need to know where they are living and hiding or where they should be so that you can actually cultivate more referrals into your business. Because of that, I don't teach referrals as referral. If you want a referral, that's a nail, and the only tool you need is a hammer, right? Mm. I teach a fully stocked toolbox, and that's where those 20 strategies come from. There are three foundational strategies that I teach. The first book, Generating Business Referrals Without Asking, comes from the very first strategy I deployed for myself. And then I started teaching to others when others started asking me how I was getting referrals so quickly when I started this business, which was actually a coaching practice back in the day, almost 13 years ago. So that was like that signature strategy. This is how I was able to generate referrals. But from that, of course, that's just one group of people. And that is people who already refer you. And that's really what the book was based on, is like, hey, you have people who are referring you. This is the strategy we follow to generate more referrals from them. It became one of the signature strategies that I teach. And it has been for almost 13 years that I've been in business. And it's one of those that's just evergreen. It's never going to change. Like, you know, people talk about having to update their materials and change what they teach because the algorithm changes or this changes or whatever. I haven't had to do that, which is a blessing. But because referrals are evergreen and people are people. And right. So that is a really important piece. So the first book speaks to one of those foundational strategies, but there are three of them. The second book speaks to another one of the foundational strategies. So they operate separately. So that's why I tell folks that pick the one to start with, but they're going to tackle different things. So when we talk about referrals, I talk about the three groups of people that you can get referrals from that you get the fastest ROI. There are other groups, but the three that you can get the fastest ROI from are going to be the people who refer you now, your existing mm-hmm. referral sources. That's book one. The second one's going to be within your client experience and making sure you understand what your client experience needs to look like and you actually know how to bridge the gap two referrals, that means you got to be more than just amazing. You got to be more than just doing amazing work. And the third group, of course, and that's what the second book is based on, the referable client experience. And the third book, if I ever do a third book, but
I
it's
was
going to
going
be
to say there
based.
must be a
Yeah.
third book. Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
Every time I write one, I'm like, I'm never doing that again. But if I do a third book, it will definitely be based on the third strategy, which is how to get new people to start referring you. And so you think about it, people who already refer you, existing referral sources, that's a group that can refer you more. Clients can refer you, depending on what you do, but clients can refer you. And then we all have people we wish would refer us. And those are our potential referral sources. So that's how the books, they actually complement each other. There is different information in both because they tackle different strategies.
Okay, that makes total sense. All right, so this book is about the client experience. So, what are you hoping people understand when they hear that phrase, the referable client experience?
Yeah, so the big thing I want people to understand, and it's actually, I want them to like take a deep breath and give themselves a break. Because most of the time, people believe that if they're doing excellent work, they should be receiving referrals. And maybe something's wrong because they're not. And what I want people to understand is doing excellent work does not equal referrals. You can do amazing, excellent work, probably like you and I do, and all of your listeners do, right? Like we do, like we don't do perfect work. That's not what I'm talking about, right? But we do valuable work. What we do matters. It's valuable to our clients, right? And when there are problems, we know how to solve them on behalf of our clients, that kind of stuff. But the idea is that that's all you have to do to generate referrals. And then that leaves some people to be like, well, I must be doing something wrong because I'm not getting referrals. It's first thing I want people to understand is, they don't equal. Like doing
Don't
great work
expect. You can't
does not
expect
equal
them.
referrals, right? So don't expect them and don't think something's wrong because you're not getting them. It doesn't mean you're not doing excellent work. What people don't understand is they think because my client loves me, that means they must refer me. And the truth is, because your client loves you, that's why they're your client. And if they can repeat and come back to work with you again, that's why they'll do it. And will they maybe talk to you out there in generic terms? Probably, but will they actually take the extra step and, you know, to put their reputation on the line, to actually connect someone to you who has the potential to hire you? That's a whole different jump you got to make within your clients. And most people don't realize that. And so the first thing I always want people to know is like, if you're not getting referrals, that's okay. It's just because you don't know what to do to bridge the gap to referrals, but you can still get amazing testimonials, have your clients give you amazing feedback, have your clients tell you that you're awesome, have your clients tell you that they talk about you. None of those things are referrals though. And so it's just important for people to understand, oh, I've got what I need. Now I need to know how to bridge the gap to referrals. But I'll be honest, Janice, there's a lot of folks that I talk to that I'm like, you're not actually referable yet. Like there are some things your business has to have in place that more than just doing great work, you have to first have like what we call like the environment for referrals to even start. And that is being referable means more than great work. So think about it this way. The work you do is one part of the equation, one part of the formula. The relationship you build with your clients is the other piece. And when you have both of those pieces, then you can bridge the gap to actually knowing the tactics or the strategies to do to generate referrals.
Well, but like that to me seems like a no-brainer. Like if I'm working with somebody, I'm going to build a relationship with them. That's just through my curiosity, through my conversation with them. It's not just cut and dried, like here's the work, you know, like I've done it, goodbye. So what does that look like? I mean, for people who don't know.
Yeah, so I think you and I are in unique positions because it's a big part of what we teach others, right? It's a big part of like how we run our businesses. It's a big part of how our work is set up, right? Is to be in relationship with people. But for most business owners, and I mean, I would make the argument, I know I sometimes fall into this as well. When you get a new client, you get so like into the moment of jumping in to do the work. Right, jumping in to follow the process, right, of like onboarding that client and getting them up and going, and whatever your process looks like, depending on what you do. And the more clients you have, the more distance you get from actually having relationships with your clients. And when I say being in relationships, What I'm talking about is not that you know everything about their life. It's not that you always know everything that's happening. It's not that you're taking your clients for coffee every month or every quarter, because let's be honest, none of us have time for that. And most of us aren't even local to where our clients are, right? The idea is that you understand, like, the way that I talk about the relationship piece in a relationship, in a client relationship, in a client experience, it's understanding what your client is going through as they move through the stages of working with you. And we define those in three stages, but as they're moving through working with you through these stages, is what we call the quiet voice. What are the things that they're thinking but not saying? And how are you addressing them before they have a chance to even articulate it to you? And then making sure you're leaning in so that they know you see them more than just a client, more than just a number, right? This isn't the relationship terms in terms of, oh, we're now going to be best friends, right? That's not what we're talking about on that personal
Is it
level.
understanding them better and knowing where to go in your next steps because of something they may be exhibiting or sharing with you?
Yeah, it's that overall totality of being like a little bit of that surprise and delight factor, like, oh, I just didn't expect that from my CPA, right? I just didn't expect that from my architect. I just didn't expect that from my marketing consultant, right? It's that ability to be more human, but keeping it within a repeatable process so that all your clients get to feel it. And the way that I teach it is you do that based on what your clients are going through and what they're feeling through the process. And then you're just looking for moments to infuse what we call relationship touch points. And sometimes they have nothing to do with the work that you're doing in that moment. And sometimes they're complementing the work that you're doing in that moment. But it's just reminding your clients that you see them more than just a number or more than just a name on your to-do list to handle something for them. No one starts a business to see their clients as a massive checklist. But the longer you're in business, the more that's what business starts to look like. And so it's like, oh, I got to do these things. I got to do these things. I got to, in addition to like operations and payroll and finances and all the things and running my business, business has become one long to-do list. And it's just that ability to reset. And if you have a team, it's ability to reset with your team to make sure that you are referable. And that referability piece comes from the relationship that you build, which means it has to be more than just the work you're doing.
Okay, so you mentioned the word touch points, and you distinguish in your book between work touch points and relationship touch points. Can you share an example of how one small shift can change how a client feels?
Yeah, so here's one I just want. Okay, I want to give an example, and then there's a couple that I could give, but let me start with this example. One of the things that I think people miss out on is like making sure that their clients understand that there's a human behind the business too, right? And just that connection piece. So one easy thing I tell folks to do is that sending holiday cards, but not putting a generic holiday card together, or not putting, like a holiday card where it's just like a picture of the business. Maybe it's a picture of the team within the business. Maybe if it's just you in the business, or you don't want to put your team on the Christmas card or the Hanukkah card or the holiday card, maybe it's you and your family, right? It's the reminding of that relationship piece of like, hey, right, you're a person, I'm a person, we've got families behind us. Like, that's one simple thing. Other times when we kind of talk about examples of this, we talk about the quiet voice as someone moves from the new stage, the active stage, the alumni stage. And sometimes the quiet voice is all the things they're not saying. And one way you can show up on that relationship side is when a new client starts and they're onboarding, they're having all kinds of thoughts they're not telling you. And it's actually more than just buyer's remorse. It's usually a mix of buyer's remorse, anticipation, excitement, and concern. And it's all kind of rolled up into one. The longer you're in business, you know what your clients are feeling, because eventually clients start to verbalize it. Right. Oh, I was excited to hire you, but I knew that meant I was going to have to do work. Oh, I was looking forward to working with you, but I knew that meant that I was actually going to have to change or be challenged or get better at this or be willing to do this when I usually don't do it, whatever it is. Right. And it's acknowledging that to them. So you may have your onboarding process that's happening where they're completing the registration form and paying their deposit or whatever it is, right? Signing the agreement, getting started. In my world, it's like getting started with your pre-work, getting to understand how the online portal works if they're in my coaching program. But it's also then showing up as a person being like, hey, like just a handwritten card. Like, hey, like I'm so excited to work with you, but I know this journey is going to probably stretch and challenge you. And that's expected and that's normal. And you're not alone. I'm your co-pilot coming right alongside you, right? We call that the journey card. It's the mapping out the journey that your client is probably already feeling and already sensing, and then mapping it out for them. Because once you label it and once you call it out and you like say, hey, this is probably what you're feeling, then you normalize it. Then there's no concern regarding it. And what people don't realize is that when you put me at ease, that's when I start to trust you more, and that's where our relationship starts to grow. So that journey card, right? It feels very much like, well, it feels like a work touch point, but it arrives to your client on the relationship side because of what it says. It doesn't say, thanks for being our client. We're so excited to make money, right? You know, like that's a terrible welcome card. But most people's welcome cards effectively say that. They're like, thanks so much for becoming a client. We're excited to work together. Like, do more, right? Think about what your client's going through and really meet them there in that moment. And that's a simple handwritten card.
Totally. Yeah, that makes sense. And again, there's that misnomer, I guess, that it's the wrong word, but I can't think of another one. Between thinking that just because you finished working with somebody actively right now, and now they're on an email list, and you just send them this sequence of emails, which I don't do because I can't stand them, but those are touch points, but they're really not the same. I know that you have, I think you talk about, is it 6 to 8 touch points a year for your alumni clients? And we can talk about what that means. You can clarify if you want, but is that right? So those touch points, whether it's 6, 8, 10, whatever, they're not all the same.
Yeah, the variety piece is kind of important. And I think it depends on the type of business that you have and what you want to do. Like, so here's the thing. I don't think there's anything wrong with sending a monthly email to your alumni clients, right? Like, I'll just kind of give it the perspective from inside my business. So inside my business, you know, most of the time when people, whether they're referred to me or they hear me on a podcast like your audience, or they see me speak, or, you know, Amazon gods favor my book in the moment and they promote it and you're like, oh, okay, I'll get that book. It's got some good reviews. Let's check that book out, right? However, they land in my world, right? If they make the decision to work with me and then we've gone through the process of working together, and whether that's 90 days in my accelerator or a year in my coaching program, like once they get to the end of that, right? I don't want them to receive, and while they're a client as well, I don't want them to receive the weekly emails I'm sending to people who are just starting to learn about me that haven't made the decision to hire me, right? That's what my weekly emails are for. But once you've been a client and you've moved to that alumni stage, right? One of the things that we've instituted is actually what we call is a monthly roundup email that we send out on the first of every month. But for our alumni, it is entirely different than what prospects are going to be seeing on a weekly email. Now, my clients are used to getting a monthly roundup email because all of my programs, no matter which of my three programs you're in, and we're about to add it for a fourth program, they're used to getting monthly roundups that tell them what's happening that month in the program that they're in. Like, here are the Q&A calls. Here's the link to schedule a one-on-one with me. Here's something you need to do with your dashboard. Here's something we do every February, like whatever it is, right? But in addition to that, so for the alumni to start receiving that, but they are specific to what I already know the alumni have learned. And I just want to remind them of the things that they've learned when they worked with me so they don't forget to do the things they're supposed to be doing, right? But that's 12 emails a year. They are the same. You know they're inevitably going to be missed. If they stop checking them, they will eventually land in someone's junk folder, right? And then they won't see them until they see one and pull them out and rescue them. So I think if you're going to email your alumni clients on an ongoing basis, like that is not a, well, I send this email to everybody so they can get it too. Ours are, I personally write my alumni emails every single month. And so, and it's, I'm specifically saying, hey, it's January. You know what you have to do in January. Set up your new dashboard for the year, right? You're not working with me. I'm not giving you one, but go copy last year's. Do it again, right? Like, here's what you need to do. So I think the email piece is fine. I think as long as it is something that they want and something that is useful,
That's
I think
useful,
that's the key, right?
yeah.
But to your point, though, The other parts that you're going to do for your alumni clients, there's got to be some variety. So for our alumni clients, it really depends on where you are. Like, are you in your first year of being an alumni? Or are you in your fifth year of being an alumni? And we definitely tier down, and we just have to because of volume and budgets and all kinds of things, right? But at a minimum, if you're an alumni client of mine and you've been in the last couple of years, you're going to get a holiday card, right? You're probably going to get an invitation to something else that we're doing. Like, there's other things that we're going to include you on and involve you in, depending on what we're doing. But you're probably going to experience more of that in your first year and less of that as your alumni five. It's been 5 years since you worked with me. So there's not a number. Like, it's got to be seven, it's got to be four. But there is this idea that you need to have some type of when they're no longer a client, there's no longer work to deliver. Now we're only leaning into it from a relationship perspective. What does that look like? And, I've been teaching the referable client experience as like a strategy that what versus like how I usually first teach something is I'll teach it live and then I'll record it for my clients and then it can be available to the those in the online program. But this one we started teaching like late 2020. Because I really realized people are missing this. Like, I always made a disclaimer. I can get you referrals, but I'm assuming you're referable. And then finally, I was like, maybe I should actually define what that means and make sure everybody's on the same page. It's not just great work. But we actually made it like it was taught live to people. And then it was part of our program as one of our 20, like in 2021, 2022, or something like that. We've even since then, I've even evolved what our alumni client experience looks like. So these things do take on evolution and they do change. And sometimes we've pulled back and sometimes we've leaned in. But you should always make sure that if you want repeat clients, if that's possible, or you want referrals from your alumni clients that aren't referring you before they move to alumni, you're going to have to figure out how you're going to stay top of mind awareness with them.
So most people think, oh, I've got to remember to ask for a referral when I'm done business, or ask, right? And I know you're like, that's the complete opposite of your strategies and your business. But where does that come from? Why do we feel we have to ask?
Yeah, because it's the only advice that's been out there for decades and decades, right? It's that idea that if the gurus and the experts who teach the asking, the mentality that they bring to it is I want to get you as quickly as possible to the next prospect, right? To the next potential client. And one quick way to do that is to ask people to refer, right, somebody else to you. Not even theory, but like in terms of me just saying it, there's like you, it sounds like, okay, I guess I could see how that would be true, right? It's like from this perspective, like if you want to get me as fast as you can get me to the next prospect, then telling me to ask my current clients is probably the fastest way to get there. What was never paid attention to, what was never acknowledged, and was usually said, if you feel this way, then you should get over yourself, right? Is actually how awkward that is, and actually how uncomfortable that can be, and how it changes the dynamics of the relationship with the person you're asking, and how it starts to commoditize the relationship with that person because the science wasn't clearly considered when that advice was created. It's just like, hey, this is easy. You want another client? Go ask somebody to give you one without realizing that, oh my gosh, there's so much. This is not A plus B equals C. Like, there's so much lost in translation between A and B that that's why you never really get to see. And so that's really like when people start talking about like, but asking, I've been told I have to ask. I'm like, yeah, because nobody had thought about a different way to do it. And that's what they just taught for decades and decades.
I love that you call yourself a contrarian, because I love that word in itself. But yeah, that there is another way, and you've got a handle on it, and you've got the market on it, which is great. Something you and I have talked about in an email, actually, conversation, I think, a while back, when I heard you on somebody else's podcast. One of your past clients, I think, and the topic of the question or conversation was about sending gifts that are branded with your business. And I had just been talking to somebody, a colleague, not really a prospect of mine or anything, but he was new in his business, and he was talking, and he was so excited about how he had just purchased these beautiful, I forget the name, Yeti maybe, water bottle or whatever. And he was going to send them out to his 12 new prospects. And I thought, I looked at my water bottle and I thought, I never would take one out. Or like if it's got your company name on it, I don't really want that. If it's got my company name on it, it might be kind of cool. But anyway, so I had just heard you talking about this and I said to him, I told him my theory on it, and then I heard you, and it was like exactly the same. And I went, "Oh God, I've got to send this to him. Do you think I'll insult him, or do you think it'll help?" Anyway, I did send it to him, and he was appreciative. But I want you to
Oh,
share
good.
that theory.
So here's what I always tell folks. I have some hard and fast rules around logoed items, and then I have some gray area. And I think it's important for folks to understand that. My hard and fast rule around logoed items is that when you are using logoed, when you are using any type of gift that you were sending to somebody who is a referral source. So this is whether they're a client or a center of influence or like, your college roommate, right? So when they, no matter what their label is, client, center of influence, whatever, right? Family or friend. When they refer you and you choose to send them a gift, right, as part of your plan for how you're going to take care of them, that gift should always be about them, never about you. And your logo on something is always about you, right? Even if it is in the brand new Yeti or the brand new Stanley, right? It doesn't matter. It is about you because your logo's on it. And that is a hard and fast no, absolutely not. We do not put our logos on items that we are gifting to our referral sources. That's my hard and fast rule. Now, where I find like there is some gray in that is when you're talking to your clients and your client experience and you're talking about prospects and then you're doing, right? And then there's like the next layer is like the sponsorship booth, right? Everybody's got logoed items there. That's why one of the reasons why you have a booth, right? But the idea here is when you move to the clients and you move to the prospects, right? There is more of an understanding that you're going to probably, there's like people will probably give out items that have their logo on it. But I always ask the question is, depending on how much those things cost you, what happens if they never make it out of the house? Like, what happens if they never actually, we have gotten logoed Yetis before, right? And I don't think I make a conscious decision not to like to deliberately not grab the one that has like the commercial real estate's logo on it, but I do definitely defer more to like my college alumni or like my college mascot or my kids' school's high school's mascot. I'm good, like I just or my beloved Red Sox. Like I'm just gonna defer to that one over your commercial real estate one. No disrespect, right? But like that's the reality is how often they actually use because you want them used as a billboard for your business, but they don't work like that. So I think at that point, if you're going to do something that's going to be like we do the same thing inside our client experience is we don't actually give out anything with our logos on it, right? But we do give out things that talk about referrals, right? So we can still extend the brand messaging without it being like a blanket, like logoed cup, right? Or logoed mug or something like that. We do extend the brand messaging by maybe what we're including and what we're actually like. Sometimes when people have like taglines and things like that, those things can work better, right? Or you have sayings that you're known for. So one of the sayings that I'm known for is keep calm and referral on. Like that's something I've been using for, I don't know, it's the 12, 13 years I've been in business. Like I saw it early on, I switched it out and I was like, this is fantastic. And, we have it on candles, we have it on stickers, we put it on cards. Like, so you can do things that are valuable for your client, valuable for your prospect, where the brand identity can be there, but it's so much better than just doing something that is logoed. I would still, even though it's gray area, I would tell folks, don't do it if you don't have to. You can probably be more clever.
Yeah, exactly. And I love that. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
So you, I have a comment here. Small businesses have something big brands can't replicate. What is that advantage, and how can my listeners and viewers lean into that?
It's being small. Like for so long, being small was kind of seen as like the, oh, I'm not there yet, or I haven't arrived. I haven't built this eight figure business. I don't have a team of 10 or 50. And yeah, I'm just getting started. And small is like, you don't want to stay small. You want to scale, right? Like being small is your superpower. And you can still be considered small and have like 10 or less employees or 50 or less employees. Like everybody gets to define small a little bit differently. But I think the smaller you are, the more nimble you are. And in that case, it's your ability to connect better. and to do the things that big brands could never do because their people aren't always talking to their clients. Or, but think about this. Think about the larger companies where you go to purchase something from them and you never talk to any, like you maybe watch a demo on the website, right? But you never actually talk to someone. Or think of a larger company that has sales reps, but they're doing enterprise sales, right? They're doing like, hey, I'm going to sell to you and then I'm going to go talk to somebody else and sell to them. But the delivery of that is going to be handled by somebody totally different and I can't influence it and I'm totally separate. The smaller you are, the more integrated everything becomes.
Yeah,
And
it's
that
true.
ability to really lean into that client experience and to do different things and to show up in different ways, to me, I just believe it and I see it every day with my clients and with myself. Like our my ability to do that is because I'm small. And I think that is our true superpower.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you because I love working one-on-one with people, and that's when I shine, I believe, and I love that. And I'm not trying to scale in this time of my life. So, if I can stay connected to the people that I'm working with. It's funny, yesterday I was working with a client, and it was our last session on LinkedIn session together, and he has gone from corporate to consulting on his own. He's sort of in transition. And he's got a lot of people that he knows and trusts in his business because he's been in it for a long time in the industry, commercial real estate, actually. And he said something about he had talked to he talked to, I think, someone he was asking to do a recommendation for him on LinkedIn. And because I was encouraging him to get recommendations to, it's the only social proof on LinkedIn right now. And because he has a lot of people that know and respect him in the industry, it would be good to have something on there. He said, oh, that's no problem. So he's talking to this guy. And so he's sharing with me yesterday, because he's very, I guess, introverted in that he doesn't want to put too much of himself out there. He's not really interested in doing a lot of content. I said, well, you've got to be visible somehow. But anyway, we had this conversation. And he said that this person that he was asking made some comment about his view on doing your LinkedIn profile, your about section, and something about, it's really got to be about what your customers want and what's in it for me. And he's giving him this lecture when he's already had me work with him on it and has a new one. So my client said, well, take a look at the one that I've just finished. And he said, hey, that's really good. So he wanted that, that, what's the word? He wanted that pat on the back that he'd done the right thing. And yet he was kind enough to let me know that had happened, which was really kind. And I appreciated. But it was just that people are always looking for, what's the word I'm looking for? They're looking for like people that agree with them. They're looking for,
Oh, okay.
yeah, I know, I'm sorry. And that they've done the right thing. Well, maybe that would help if he decides to refer someone to me. I'm not going to ask him, but I'm going to stay connected with him and so be top of mind with him so that maybe, more people will, because he'll be more proud of what we've done together. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I think I think that validation, right? I think that's the word
Thank
we're looking for. Yeah. I don't know what came to me either, but I knew exactly what you're trying to say.
I'll be okay.
Yeah, but I think that validation, particularly like, he's newer, right? Starting a business. He may be super well-versed in the subject matter expertise. And most of the people I work with are expert-based business owners, right? Like, and I always tell them that I work with a lot of folks who've got a nice alphabet soup after their name, right? They are true expert-based business owners. And they're like, I am a great attorney and I decided to start my own firm. I am a great financial advisor and I wanted to go out on my own. Or I am a great interior designer and I wanted to go out on my own. Or I'm this amazing change management consultant and I worked at the big consulting firm and now I want to go out on my own. And then they have to figure out how to be a business owner on top of their great amazing expertise. And so, yeah, I do think there's sometimes when that can be very overwhelming. We find ourselves in a place where we're like, we're talking to folks, we're getting advice or whatever, and we kind of want to be like, I'm already doing that. I already got that. Like, we just want to like prove ourselves. Like, well, I got that box checked. Like, I have something figured out. I hired a consultant to make sure I had that piece right. Like, yeah, I think that is always because let's be honest, as a business owner, right? I mean, I've been in business almost 13 years. There is still so many people trying to vie for my attention to try to help me with my business to sell me something, right? And
Oh,
it's no
yeah.
different than what I do. It's no different than what you do, right? You're out there to help people with their LinkedIn profiles. I'm here to help people generate more referrals. And there are a multitude of people like us or complement what we do or in our exact space or in other spaces. And it gets really noisy for business owners to figure out who am I going to listen to? What am I going to focus on? And that's why I always tell clients, I'm like, you can't solve all your business problems in a year, but you could probably solve three or four of them. So, like, do you even know what the three or four that you need to solve this year? And then find the experts you decide you're going to listen to in that particular area and go one by one and then decide if you're going to hire who you're going to hire from those that you've narrowed it down to. But if not, you'll just be ping ponging all over the place looking for folks that can, give you advice because there's tons of those folks out there willing to give advice.
That's for sure. Daily in my inbox, all, as soon as I went, and I thought I told you this, but I forgive me if I didn't, that I'm now on YouTube as well. And as soon as I put my podcast on YouTube, there's a zillion people telling me how to do it better.
Oh, and they're getting like, this is the, I see this a lot. So we really leaned into YouTube last year. I finally conceded to my assistant, Kathy, who was like, you have got to turn your podcast into a video podcast. And I'm like, fine. So I
Yeah,
did
I
it. I
know.
finally did it last year. So we've been all on YouTube too. And like in the beginning, when those folks would reach out, like, hey, let's improve your YouTube channel. Now they're just mean. They're like, here's the 14 things you're doing poorly and you need to fix it. And I'm like, everything's fine right now for what I want it to be. And
Yes,
like, and a
exactly.
part of me is like I would ever use somebody who's just mean when
I
they come
know.
across, here's all the things you're doing wrong.
Yeah, I know. I've had so many of those lately. Anyway, all right. If someone wants to start becoming more referable without overhauling their entire business, where is one meaningful place to begin?
Okay, so this is a great exercise. It's going to take a little bit of space. This is not something you can just knock out on your morning walk or knock out in like a 30-minute session. You may need an hour. So just, it's a great exercise that you can do though. And that is just from start to finish. Imagine a new client said yes to you. And you're going to write down, okay, a client just said yes to me. What's the very next thing that happens? And then you're just going to ask your question yourself, what's the next thing? And the next. And then this is going to help you create your entire client experience start to finish. So you're mapping out your entire client experience start to finish from the things you do from the minute they say yes till they're done working with you. And if you do anything in the alumni stage, anything that you're also connecting with your clients on in the alumni stage, you're going to map it all out. Right. Then you're going to look at everything you wrote down and everything that is delivering work. Like the main purpose of it is to deliver work. You're going to put a W by it. And then you're going to look and you're like, anything that is purely relationship based, that client appreciation party, those holiday cards, whatever it is, like those are the two I find that most, that some people have, a majority of people have. Then you're going to put an R by them. And what you're looking for is how many W's do I have in relation to the number of R's that I have, work being W's being work touch points and R being relationship building touch points. And some of them may be both, right? It may be like we're ending the job with the client and we're providing a gift. So it may be a W and an R. But you look at how many W's you have versus how many R's you have. And as you look through each stage in your business, new, active, and an alumni, and depending on how long the active stage is, you want to make sure you've got at least 20% of the touch points in any given stage being relationship focused. Most folks map out their client experience, then they assign their W's and their R's, and they realize they send a welcome card at the beginning and a holiday card every year and a thank you card at the end, and that's it. And they're like, oh, barely at 1% for the relationship, for the R's that I'm trying to do. But it's the best place just to see the gaps
Great idea.
that
Great
you have,
idea.
right? And just acknowledge, like, I don't need, like, I'm not, this is not a one-to-one. For every work I do, I deliver a relationship. That's creepy and weird. Don't do that. But Like I think about it from like for every three or four or five touch points that you're doing that's work related, is there anything that you're coming behind that from that perspective and doing that is relationship based as well? But what you do based on which stage matters. And we have best practices in the book. So like when you get to part two of the book, we break down the new stage, the active stage, and the alumni stage. We talk about pitfalls to avoid, the things that matter most in that stage, and then some best practices. Like they're in the book, so people can go grab them from the referable client experience. Or just use them to jumpstart your creative thinking in terms of what other relationship touch points you could be doing.
That's fantastic. And that's a great reason for people to go and purchase your book, which I'm guessing they can buy on your website and on Amazon. Or,
Where they can not on my website, but
okay.
wherever books are sold. So
Right.
which
Okay.
whichever retail, if they have a local independent store, an indie store, if they have like Barnes and Nobles over Amazon, it doesn't matter. Wherever
Okay.
books are sold, you'll be able to purchase the book, yes.
Perfect. All right. That's a wonderful last question, really, to ask you because it makes me want to go and do that myself. So that's awesome. I'm going to reread the part in the book and get a fresh sheet of paper and my fountain pen. And I'm just going to, yeah. Anyway, it's
Yes.
fantastic. Thank you again, Trace. Stacy, I did it again. I might, God.
Okay.
Stacy with an E too, and for being my guest again, and I love to share your work with my clients because it's such a good fit. In fact, I have a couple of notes that I had written down that your book strongly aligns strongly with me and Relationships Rule because it's with staying connected without an agenda, being remembered for how you make people feel. Building relationships that outlast transactions and appreciation as a strategy, not a tactic. So you don't need to force the connection. It will happen organically if you lean into the feeling side of a conversation. And I love that because, as I said earlier, it's my curiosity that makes that go further and happen. So I always inspire for people to be more curious because that's what will make it build the relationship faster. Because when you're asking questions, it's about them, it's not about you.
Right.
Yeah.
And I always tell folks sometimes when they learn those things from me and I'm like, we're going backwards, they're like, wow, we're going real backwards. This feels real slow. And I'm like, yep, because that's a human on the other end.
It's fantastic. Well, thank you so much. And I hope that my viewers and my listeners will see the power in this conversation. And as a reminder that referrals are not transactions, they're moments of trust, pride, and connection. And I know that Tracy has given us a thoughtful way to look at our relationships and our client experience through a much more human lens. So, Stacy, thank you. Thank you for sharing your wisdom and for reminding us that how we make people feel is always what they remember.
Thank you for having me, Janice. I loved being back.
You're very welcome. Thanks for joining us. If today's show inspired you to make a new connection, why not start with me? Head over to LinkedIn and connect with me. Be sure to let me know you are a podcast listener because I select one listener each month who connects with me on LinkedIn for a complimentary profile audit. And you know I love to meet new people, so I hope you take me up on it. Don't forget to stay connected and be remembered.